Welcome back to the 70s versus the 80s, the podcast that asks important questions such as who was more annoying, the guy in the winger t-shirt and the long greasy hair that would play Donkey Kong Jr. 8 times in a row? Or what about the other person that would come up behind him and passively aggressively put the stack of 6 quarters in front of him to say, I'm playing next? I don't get that. Why was it 6 quarters? Because it only costs 1 quarter. So why would you play 6 times in a row if you're next?
Well, he was just making an investment in his future there, I think.
In his future. But do you remember people doing that, stacking the quarters in front of somebody, like passively aggressively? Yes.
Remember that video game Knockout? They do body blow, body blow.
Yeah.
One of them was, yeah. Yeah, they had one of those in Apple Valley. I can't remember where. Maybe at the roller skating rink, and guys would come up behind you and kind of nudge you and put their quarters.
Yeah, you know. And they act like they did it a million times before, like all casually and stuff.
It's like they're playing. It's like they're playing pool, and they lay a $10 bill on the pool table, like they got dibs or whatever.
Yeah, I was wondering if it almost started. Yeah, it probably started back then, or like before us when they did the pinball. I think that was a pinball thing to do.
Pinball. It's in The Hustler too. I mean, that like Jackie Gleason and Paul Newman.
Oh, that's a great
1960s. Yeah, they would come and put a $10 bill on the table or whatever it was.
I wish that was a 70s or 80s so we could cover that movie. That's a great movie. Yeah.
But, you know, we're old enough to remember roller skating rinks. And, you know, when you'd go roller skating, there was a roller skating. And then there was the video game arcade thing in the back there where they had all those video games.
Yeah.
You know, and there'd always be blood on the floor because somebody'd skate in there and somebody'd trip them and they'd fall and cut their head open on a pinball machine. But it was a nice thing for them to have in there.
That'd be a great name for this episode. There's a blood on the floor. Always blood on the floor. All right, that's The Boys Are Back in Town, and we've been gone for a while, but we are back, Jim. Did you know that?
I heard that, and I started to get nervous because we haven't done this in a while. But so Boys Are Back in Town, who was that? Who sang that? I can't remember.
That was Thin Lizzy, and I'm starting to have a little revival with them. I've been listening to them. I really think he has one of the most classic voices for classic rock. And their guitar. I think they have the classic rock guitar and the classic rock voice for the lead singer. But I think they just have a real good classic sound.
Yeah, I think that's the American sound before, like, the Clapton type stuff sort of come this way.
And that's the thing. They were not American. They were Irish. The lead singer was
you know that. I didn't know that.
The lead singer was half. He was actually half black, half or Irish black or whatever. And but when they sing, like in The Boys Are Back in Town, he said, you know, we're going to Billy's Bar and Grill. I mean, they one of their famous songs that's getting famous lately is called the Cowboy Song. They really tried to emulate the American. So I can see why you think they're American. I thought they were too because they just tried so hard to be like an American. So
it worked. I honest to God, I did not know that they were Irish.
So The Boys Are Back in Town, and I know everybody was sad we were gone so long, and it's so sad. I think we should play this music right here. Give me a second. Jim probably can't hear it.
You can hear it. Sort of cry now.
That is that. You know what that song's called?
Don't.
The Lonely Man.
Man.
And that's the just think of Bill Bixby. Think of Bill Bixby hitchhiking in the rain at the end of the episode, and that's the song they always played. I don't know why it was always raining and he was always hitchhiking.
That wasn't Bill Bixby. That was Dr. David Banner.
David Banner. And that's another thing. His name in the comic books and in the new movies is Bruce Banner. They were a little homophobic. They thought Bruce kind of sounded, I don't know why they think that's a gay name. They thought it was too gay sounding. And
what is gay sounding? That's amazing.
Yeah, I don't know. I was like a, and for some other reason, I think because they thought he was a little older. I don't know what they changed his name to David Banner instead of Bruce Banner, which is you know what it's known on the new movies, the comic books, and stuff.
I'd forgotten about that.
So that's what we're talking about today. Is the Incredible Hulk started late '77, but it didn't really go into full TV till 1978. In 1978, a little movie came out called Superman, and you know back, you know Superman is a DC, and Incredible Hulk is a Marvel, so we thought it'd be kind of fun to do Lou Ferrigno versus Christopher Reeve, you know DC versus Marvel.
Sure.
So I don't know where we should start here. So let's talk about. We're already talking about the Incredible Hulk a little bit. What's the first thing that comes to your mind when you think of that?
Well, it was just so huge when it came out that when Hulk came out, because it was something on the small screen. You know, you didn't have to be in a theater to enjoy it, and it took over everything. The Incredible Hulk was a huge show, and
yeah,
just loved it.
And I remember the pilot episode came out. And then I don't think they had a second episode for. They were almost like mini movies when it came out because they didn't have like a second one for like 2 months later, and then I think by episode three it started coming out weekly. It kind of skipped a couple months, kind of often like our podcast. But so it almost felt like a movie when it came out. And it was so different than anything else that was on TV at the time. So the reason I'm kind of comparing these two is And then, you know, Superman was slick. It looked smooth. The cinematographer was Jeffrey Unsworth. I'm probably saying his name wrong. He was from 2001 Space Odyssey. And he made, you know, you just think of that clean look. Superman was so clean. You know, Christopher Reeve came out in 78 with that Superman. And he had that, what do you call, I think he had the first 80s haircut. He had that Gordon Gekko. Just gelled down, you know, hair. Don't you know how his hair was just perfectly gelled?
Yep.
And then we go to the Incredible Hulk, who has that just butch mullet, you know.
But like, oh, man, that's funny.
And, you know, and the cinematography was so perfect for Superman. Everything was, you know, there's no straight lines except for the sides of the buildings. And then you go to the Incredible Hulk, and it was just like grainy. I remember watching the show, you know, and Hulk would come on the screen. It was all grainy. His clothes were all ripped. And I was like, Mom, is my tetanus shot updated? Because I think I needed to watch this show.
Yeah, like, he had the Levi 501s that, you know, they looked like capri pants on Lou Ferrigno. They came just down past his knees, but they were, you know, ripped and everything.
Yeah. And it was funny, they always ripped that way, but they didn't, like, rip completely off, even though you went to
fight. Yeah, and they were too small around the leg, but for some reason they were just fine in the waist.
Yeah, it didn't, so, like, didn't break it open there. And, yeah, and then he would always have that, he always had, like, that, his shirt would be, like, in a rag, and then Lou Ferrigno would just grab it and throw it down, like, I just...
Yeah, he pissed off at the shirt.
Pissed off at, he's got a rag of a shirt on, and, I guess I was watching the documentary and they said women really liked when the clothes ripped for some reason. Like,
really? Huh. Yeah, because he was so handsome.
Yeah. So I think we were both kind of in the same boat. We're both bigger fans of the Incredible Hulk. Is that correct?
Or do you? Like, I was, just because it was more accessible. You know, we could you know watch it every week, and there's a different story every week, and there is sometimes even a cliffhanger. And with Superman, it was just kind of a one and done, and, you know, kind of waited for the second one to come out.
Yeah, and I think Superman 2 in 1980 was a much... I think that was actually the best superhero movie until the new one started coming out. I think, you know, through the 80s and 90s, I think it was actually the best superhero movie was Superman 2. That was the one with the three, you know, General Zod, Ursa, and Nan, the three... I thought the villains were good. That's what made that movie good, I thought.
You know, there's something to be said for those early Superman films. You know, there's something to be said for the smaller production value as opposed to today's superhero movies. Are, you know, they're all special effects. They're all computer generated graphics and all that kind of stuff. And that's great. You know, that's exciting and everything. But there's something to be said for the way they did it, you know, 40 years ago with, yeah. you know, just camera tricks and, you know, engaging your imagination. For me, I like that better. I don't know why.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and I thought Superman, I thought it, the city looked a little, you could tell it was a soundstage.
Right.
But yeah. I mean, at least it was actual stuff that was there. Like when he picked up the bus, it was like actually a shell of a bus or whatever. But, and I think we kind of talked about that during the Star Wars episode. It was like, you know, the old Star Wars movies had depth to them. You know, you could tell it was a model, but you could see it. And, you know, I just guess it depends on if you like the way the new Star Wars looked compared to the old one. I kind of like the old ones, but.
Me too, you know. Star Wars, you know, the first Star Wars movies, I mean, that was amazing because somehow they were able to pull off, you know, stuff that you would see today with, you know, a lot less technology and money. Yeah. You know, that you watch the first Star Wars or second Star Wars movie, and you're, you know, if you compare it to what they're doing today, it's kind of impressive what they did back then.
Yeah. And just think that was Star Wars 1 was 77, and we're talking these two productions we're talking are 78, so right at the same time. Pretty crazy, you know, and Star Wars, I think, looked a lot more modern, you know. Yeah, so The Incredible Hulk, some other things I was kind of, the first two episodes, he had, for some reason, they gave him the square Frankenstein forehead. It was kind of a blocky forehead. I don't know if you noticed. And then they just kind of go, hey, Lou Ferrigno's kind of a good-looking guy. He's kind of soft-looking, so they just kind of they took that off and just kind of let him have his own face, and he looked so much better. I don't know, did you see any of that early footage where they were actually using a different actor than Lou Ferrigno? It was the guy from the Jaws from James Bond, and he was the Longest Yard, the tall guy from the Longest Yard.
Yeah, and it just didn't work because I can't remember what they said in the documentary, but I think it was something about the fact that people weren't going to believe that Bill Bixby's, you know, head and face and everything was going to turn into what was that guy's name? Was it Robert England or
Conrad or England or something? Yeah.
I can't remember his name, but he didn't look anything like Bill Bixby, whereas Lou Ferrigno, they brought him in, and finally that was going to be a believable thing, so they went with him.
Yeah, and that's what I liked. One of my biggest comparisons here is Superman versus the Incredible Hulk. Is like, I liked both. Like when Lou Ferrigno wasn't on the screen, I really enjoyed Bill Bixby. You know, yeah. And you know, I liked it. It was like I liked those parts almost as much as when. But Superman 1, even though I was like, what, 8 years old when that came out, whenever they showed Clark Kent in the Daily, I'm like, come on with this Daily Planet crap and Jimmy Olsen. That's our parents' stuff, you know? That was our parents' time frame. And it was like, even though I was only 8 years old, I was like just bored silly with the Daily Planet. And Lois Lane was all right. Margot Kidder's a good-looking woman. And, you know, she was all right. But the Jimmy Olsen, and it felt dated in 78 even. Do you agree? Or
to me, you know, because I wasn't, you know, I didn't read the comics and all that kind of stuff. So for me, all I needed was that, you know, the maybe the one shot of that in the beginning to tie all the characters together. But after that, it really, to me, it wasn't something that they needed to keep going with. By the way, the actor's name was Richard Kiel.
Oh, that makes sense. Yep. Richard Kiel. And I guess in the pilot, they actually left one of the... Hulk looks really tall. They actually left one of his shots into the pilot, so he actually plays. Hulk in one shot, basically.
I didn't know that, but anyway, you know, back to the Superman thing. Yeah, all I needed was a you know, maybe a shot of the Daily Planet stuff in the beginning to just to kind of establish and tie all the characters together, and then after that, to me, it was extraneous. Didn't really have any bearing in the movie for me. But
Yeah,
I don't know,
it's like
whatever.
it's it was the old joke, you know, it's like, oh look, he has glasses on so nobody can tell he's Superman now.
Yeah, exactly.
But what is this? Does this name mean anything? So we're talking Christopher Reeve. George Reeves, does that name mean anything to you?
Yes, he was the first Superman, correct? That
Yeah.
on the TV, in the TV series, he
Yeah, I
committed
think
suicide
it,
and
yeah, I didn't write down the year. Was it 52, 54, the year that the show was out?
somewhere in there.
Somewhere in the 50s.
Ben Affleck played him very well in a
Oh.
movie
Yeah, what was
several
that
years
movie
ago.
called? The Man of
Oh,
the
I'm trying to
It
remember.
wasn't the Man of Steel, it was something. No, it wasn't that. It didn't.
I'll look it up here, but it really was. The movie for some reason didn't do well, but for me, what it did was I thought it was underrated. I thought it was a good film,
I agree.
but Ben Affleck was really, really good at portraying the just kind of the sadness of this man, and because he tried so hard to be a heartthrob actor, and he was kind of right on the cusp, and he just couldn't make it over the hill, over that last boundary to make it as a sex symbol of in Hollywood. And so he did this Superman movie to try to get there. And what he did was when he was offered the chance to be in it, he went outside in the yard and he had somebody film him, like falling down and rolling and then getting back up and doing all these calisthenics to show how he's right for the part. And Ben Affleck portrayed that and redid that scene, and really in his face and the way he was acting, you could really get the sadness out of this man. It was heartbreaking. Find that film and watch it. It was really good.
No, I remember I saw parts of it, and yeah, I remember like Ben Affleck, he was really like you said, George Reeves was wanted to be, you know, he was known as Superman and he wanted to get into the movies, so they shot a little scene of him to be just a, you know, just a side character in the movie, and he goes to the theater to watch it, and everybody in the theater goes, hey, you know, they're watching the screen and they start laughing and they go, that's Superman, did you see that? That was Superman playing that part, and they all start laughing and stuff. So he was typecast because once you play Superman, you know, where do you go from there? And yeah, and then the scene, I thought the movie did a good scene, like where he's like, can you know, like he has to go to the do dressed up as Superman, he has to go to do these little kid public appearances, and
Oh yeah, I remember that. I know what you're gonna say. Go ahead.
oh, and then he goes, can you see, what does he say, can you see my penis or whatever, because
Oh, I was thinking you were gonna go to the gun scene
the
or
gun
the
scene,
gun.
yeah, where he goes and the kid's like pulls out a gun and he's like, hey Jimmy, where'd you get that, and he's like, I want to see if a bullet really bounces off you or whatever, which,
Yeah.
and then he did die of a gunshot, right, eventually, George.
Well, yeah, he committed suicide. The movie's called Hollywoodland, and
Oh, weird.
Diane Lane is in it, and she's really good in it, everything. And Adrian Brody plays the detective trying to figure out what went wrong, because they found him up in a bedroom with a gun in his hand or nearby and a hole in his head. But he was having an affair with Diane Lane's character, who was married to the head of the whole movie studio. And so there, the whole gist of the movie was
Conspiracy.
Adrian Brody was a detective trying to figure out, did he commit suicide, or did Diane Lane's husband, the head of the movie studio, did he have him killed? It's a great movie.
Yeah, Hollywoodland. That's right. I would suggest that to anybody who's interested in this kind of stuff. So now let's face it, Marvel, you know, it's always when we were a kid, I don't know. It was kind of a deal, like, are you a DC person? Are you a Marvel person? I think most people in the last 10, you know, this decade have conceded that Marvel has won. You know, they got the great, they just keep pumping out one movie after another. And then some people, they'll ask me, how can you tell if someone's Marvel or DC? My kind of quick guide is I go, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman are DC. Everybody else you heard of is Marvel. And that doesn't always come, you know, there's Green Lantern is DC and you've heard of them, but it's mostly like that, I think. I think that's a pretty good guide.
It is.
Yeah, so it's just really funny how Superman got on the scene first, so DC was kind of winning. And then the Batman movies came out, Michael Keaton in the night. So DC was still kicking butt. There was no Marvel movies. And then Marvel came out with, the X-Men and the Spider-Man. The problem is they sold Spider-Man to Sony. So that's why we had, the Amazing, did you ever notice it's like the Amazing Spider-Man, the Incredible Spider-Man, or Spider-Man in front. They keep changing his name, so that they can kind of go around that.
Oh, yeah, I didn't, I never knew that.
Yeah, we've had so many Spider-Man. And actually, Spider-Man, people think the number one comic book of all time is Superman, and I'm probably sure it is. It was like the first one. And Batman was usually second. And then Spider-Man for Marvel, he would actually come in. Sometimes Spider-Man would actually outsell Superman and Batman even back in the 70s and 80s, which I was kind of surprised. But so
Oh,
Spider-Man's a
yeah.
pretty big deal.
Didn't know that.
Like when these new movies came out, Marvel was kind of like they had Spider-Man over there, so they couldn't make another Spider-Man. So that when they started Marvel Studios, they started coming out with the B stars like Iron Man, and was the first movie, and Captain America, and all these B stars. But like when this TV show came out, the Incredible Hulk was not really that well known either. I mean, it was kind of our introduction to him. He had been a comic book guy for a while. And I think it's funny, the director, he was like, because they had trouble getting green paint or green, and he's like, and then he goes to Stan Lee, and he's like, why is he green? And Stan Lee goes, well, he's supposed to be gray, but when we were doing the comic book, we had trouble with the gray ink. And he goes, and then the director's like, I can't remember the director's name right now, the guy who kind of did the whole TV show, he's like, well, I can see you're really committed to this green. He goes, he's supposed to be gray. And he goes, well, why are we so committed to this green? So they had to go to like New Zealand or something to get the green paint, and you could tell they must have had to smooth the green grease paint out with like powder, because when you watch the show, you can see he's powdered. You can see like a green powder, like kind of. He just doesn't look natural. Like he, it's like.
I remember that, and I think they tried one that made him sick or something like that, and one they tried they couldn't get off, and it was rubbing off on everyone else, and
Yeah, they said the set was just a disaster. It was green grease paint on everything.
and then everybody who came in contact with him, like if he carried somebody out of a burning building or whatever and set them down, they would have green all over them. So like
Jeez.
his hulkness was transferring onto the people he was helping or whatever. So yeah, they had to mess around with that for a while.
Then I like how they tried to get like they said when it first came out, like Bill Bixby's like, me and Lou Ferrigno cannot be seen, in pictures together because we're supposed to be the same guy, which is silly. I mean, but I like how they tried getting him and Lou Ferrigno on the screen at the same time. Like, do you remember when they had Lou Ferrigno play? He played himself. He basically played a deaf bodybuilder. Remember? Do you remember
Don't
that
remember
episode?
that.
Yeah, they had an episode with Lou Ferrigno where he just played a deaf bodybuilder, and Bill Bixby befriended him, and so they were on the screen together. I was kind of giving him pep talks and stuff. But like episode 3 or 4, they wanted him to be together, so they had like where Bill Bixby was having that nightmare scenario. Do you remember that, where he was like in the de walking through the
Don't. I don't remember either of these.
yeah he was walking through the desert, and they had like the all of a sudden the Hulk comes walking up to him, and then like that terrified me, because I was like 8 years old. And Bill Bixby, he like turns to run, and I'm like, wait, Bill Bixby's afraid of the Hulk? He is the Hulk, so that just terrified me, and I had nightmares that night about that. Yeah. So
You look a lot like me when I get pissed off. We can hang out together. I look just like you when I get pissed off. Here, dude, kick me in the nuts or something. I want to get mad. I'll
yeah, I
show you.
actually have that famous line right here. Let's see if you can hear it.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
And they actually put that in the new Ed Norton movie. That was like the only line that survived, is like, you wouldn't like me when I, that was the most famous line from the show, so they kind of had to incorporate that in. Yeah.
What did you think of the modern Incredible Hulk movies?
The singular ones I didn't like. I don't know if you ever seen the End Game, The Last Avengers, where they had Hulk had glasses, and he was like a scientist. So he was kind of trapped in between the two, where he had glasses and he's smart like a scientist, but he was still the Hulk. The Hulk was Mark Ruffalo. Mark Ruffalo.
Oh, Mark Ruffalo. Okay.
Yeah, so it looked like his face still, but he had glasses like a scientist. And I kind of liked that iteration. That was like, because, you know, you got Hulk to talk, and then, but he was still yet the Hulk. And, I mean, you didn't get to see him changing back and forth. Like, and that was the thing about the old TV show. They only, do you know he only changed twice every show because it was just so expensive?
Yeah, I do remember that. As a kid, I caught on to that. You know, there's going to be two Hulk, you know, transformations in every show. And, you know, it was, like you said, it was costly for them.
Yeah, then they had, you would, the first thing would be Bill Bixby's would have the white contacts in, his white eyes. And I guess they were terribly painful and he couldn't wear them. And they said, but for whatever reason, they said they didn't affect Lou Ferrigno and he was able to wear them, luckily, so because he had to wear them a lot.
Yeah, they were painful for Bill Bixby. So they, when, you know, they put him in and they shot like, you know, several different angles of him wearing those contacts. And I think that's what they used throughout the entire show because they were too painful for him to keep putting in. So they might have used that shot several times throughout the series.
And then it was funny when you say use the shot again, I guess. And I kind of remember this, the Incredible Hulk would break through a brick wall. I guess that was stock footage, like they used it multiple episodes.
Yeah. Yep, from different angles.
You could
yep.
see continuity errors, like where he's wearing different clothes and stuff. And so, and then like
the fun of it.
Yeah, and then they had the one where, remember when there was a competing Hulk? And that guy was really, he just looked hideous. He had an ugly face. And it just, it made it look so, like, he almost had, like, a mustache as the Hulk or whatever. And it was so hideous. And then that's why you just, they're so lucky to have Lou Ferrigno who actually, you could actually look at him and he wasn't hideous looking. So, what else? And then
Lou Ferrigno, I mean, the interesting thing about that is that he's, in real life, the sweetest, you know, kindest, most gentle person. People say when they met him and meet him, like he's still alive, that he's just the sweetest guy. You know, he's so friendly, so nice. Never turns anybody away for autographs or to meet him or for pictures or whatever else. So just the dichotomy between his personality and the Hulk was just interesting.
Yeah, the last I seen him, and you're right, he was too nice. He was on the what was Donald Trump? You got fired. The Apprentice.
Yes, The Apprentice.
So, yeah, Lou Ferrigno was on The Apprentice, and he was just too nice, and so he got, you know, Trump fired him right away.
he got stomped.
He was just a nice guy, just really, he was just always trying to do the right thing.
Exactly, and that was his Achilles heel, and he got fired, like, right away. He was, like, one of the first ones, I think.
Yeah, yep. And then, you know, was he, like, on Battle of the Network Stars, maybe? What happened to Lou Ferrigno after Hulk? I mean, he didn't really, you go, this guy's going to be a huge star, and it was just,
you know, I don't think he wanted to really be an actor. He was a bodybuilder, and he would compete in all those things with, like, Schwarzenegger and all those other guys, and, you know, that's where they kind of plucked him out to do this show, but I don't think he ever really was going to be an actor. You saw him in a couple of, you know, bit parts on different shows, you know, as a, you know, kind of a passing guy or whatever, and his acting was not good. he wasn't a good actor, but, you know, I think he was just he was made into a celebrity because of winning these bodybuilding contests and the Incredible Hulk thing. So he was a celebrity, but not necessarily a great actor.
And then the show got canceled after 5 years, The Incredible Hulk. But I was looking on, you know, not Rotten Tomatoes, maybe it was IMDb. They said they were surprised when it got canceled. I bet you it had something to do with the cost. Because they said ratings were up. And as I was looking on IMDb, you know, to kind of see how the seasons were rated and the episodes. And it kind of had the same. It didn't seem like the shows were getting worse towards the end. It seemed like they kind of had this, you know, the critics were kind of giving it the same scores as the beginning. Yeah. So I guess, and I do kind of remember that where it's kind of a shock when it went off all of a sudden, because it wasn't getting campy, or it was always campy, but it wasn't getting like worse, or it wasn't getting stupid or anything.
I think one of the things is they're running out of show ideas. You know, they're running out of
Yeah, and it just had to be so expensive, you know, to keep having to change. And I'm sure he's just getting tired of putting on the green makeup. And
yeah, I think the actors, you know, were fine. I think it was they were running out of show ideas, and it was, like you said, it was really expensive. And so they were trying to think of different things they could do, and it was just like, you know. And the studio, I think they wanted to go, they were consolidating at that time, and they just went in a different direction.
And I also think Bill Bixby was a nice guy. Like, did you know, I kind of remember this, he had a love interest on the show. And it was actually his ex-wife, because they had a kid, and he wanted his kid to have good memories of him. So he put his ex-wife as his love interest, so they were, you know, smiling and kissing and everything. Okay. So his kid could go back and see that, you know, his son. And then, unfortunately, his son died a little while after that.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I think his son passed away, like, before the last season or two, but it was great that Bill Bixby kept going on with the show after that.
He was, now, before the show, he was, wasn't he in The Courtship of Eddie's
father?
Father, he was in that show, correct?
Yeah, and I don't know much about that show. I've seen snippets of it. I don't know.
Watched it as a little kid. I mean, this is back in Roseville before we moved to Eagan, so this would be pre-1977. And I remember, you know, staying home from school sick or whatever, I'd watch it. And it was kind of a neat show. But, yeah, Bill Bixby was in that. So when he came out on in the Incredible Hulk show, I knew who the actor was.
Yeah, and I knew he was a known actor. And he was kind of, and to his credit, I think he was kind of wanting to be in a serious, and then he ends up being in this goofy superhero. But, he accepted it, and I think he did great with it. And, you know, everybody said he was kind of a delight on set and stuff. You know, so,
what did he do then after this show?
Not much. I don't think he did much. I think he just went around as Bill Bixby, kind of. I think all these guys were typecast when you're in that kind of role, you know.
Oh, wait.
Oh, do you remember the movies that came out after? So in 1989, they had the trial of David Banner, and then 1990, they had the death of, was it David Banner or the death of the Hulk? Yeah, it was the death of the Hulk. Do you remember those? Yeah, those movies came out years after the show was off.
I have to look that up.
So that's kind of what his last credits were, is basically.
He did like a bunch of things like Fantasy Island and Streets of San Francisco. And
well, he died in 93, so, and then the death of the Incredible Hulk was 1990, so he kind of, oh yeah, you're right, he did Blossom kind of the year he died, yeah. So that was about it, though. Yeah, I mean, he kind of took Hulk almost to the end.
I know that he did a lot of TV specials and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, Bill Bixby, when he did The Courtship of Eddie's Father, which was, you know, like a 3 or 4 season run, he really established himself as kind of the good guy. He was never really the heel in anything. He never played the heel. So he was a welcoming type character with anything he did after The Incredible Hulk. So,
yeah. So we're talking about, you know, how the quality of the Hulk kind of stayed the same. So let's, Superman, a little bit of a different story. So Superman 1 on Rotten Tomatoes got a 94%. God, people really like that movie. 94%. Visually, it was a good movie. Yeah. And then Superman 2, which a lot of people say, I say it's better. For some reason, Rotten Tomatoes gave it an 86, a little bit lower of a score. But I think it's a far superior than Superman 1. The thing about Superman 2 is it didn't have that stupid origin story. And I think Marvel's really got that figured out now. They don't go through they're like, we don't need to see Peter Parker get bit by the spider. We've seen that 40 times now. So now they just jump into the movie. They just jump into the superheroes, the superhero, you know. They don't show, oh, here's how he had his, I mean, they kind of did with Captain America and Iron Man a little bit in those movies, but now they're just kind of jumping right into the superhero part. And so Superman 2, did you remember Superman 3? Do you remember who the famous person was in that one? 1983?
Give me a second. I'm going to say...
it's against typecast.
It's what?
It's someone that doesn't really belong. It's, well, they were a big comedy movie guy back then.
Conway.
No, Richard Pryor. Remember he was in Superman 3?
Oh God, yes, I remember. Oh my gosh.
That got a 30%, so it drops way down. One and two were really good, and then three.
Surprising too, because I think Richard Pryor is the most genius comic of all time.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. I don't think that was the
Wow.
I don't think that was the movie for him. That's not the vehicle for his. I wanted to go see him, being in Silver Streak and, all those movies like that. He was
Oh,
been,
yeah. Did
would.
you ever see the movie, by the way? Did you ever see the movie Death Trap?
Is that the one with Christopher Reeve later? No. No.
There's a movie called Death Trap, and it used to be a like a one it was a like a one set play. And so you'd have it all
Yeah.
took place in the same room type of thing. And it was Christopher Reeve was in it, Michael Caine was in it, and I can't remember the woman's name if you're looking it up.
See,
But anyway,
1982, so it was right around Superman 2. Yeah, Michael Caine, Christopher Reeve, Diane Cannon.
Diane Cannon, yes. So Christopher Reeve played a gay character in that movie, and he kisses Michael Caine, and being so young, 11 years old or whatever, 12 when that movie came out, and seeing that kissing scene, to me, I never quite got over that when I was watching. I did as an
It's the
adult,
same
but
thing we were talking about. Yeah, everybody saw it, and everybody's like, "Kiss, Superman kissed another guy." Superman, that was what everybody was saying. And
I didn't know that. Yeah, okay. So yeah, it was hard for me to put that together. As an adult, of course, but as a kid, I just
I
couldn't
think that
justify
kind of, I mean, Christopher Reeve could have had anything he wanted. I think that kind of slowed him down. That kind of, I mean, he still
Did
went on to do other stuff, but
fairly so because that wasn't, he was a better actor than people give him credit for, and I think unfairly that part that he played, people were homophobic about.
yeah,
It's too bad.
I guess he was in Somewhere in Time, which I barely remember, in 1980.
I don't remember that at all.
And then he looks like he's on some TV show, Smallville, so he was kind of redoing the Superman thing even on TV. Oh, he was in that remake of Rear Window from 1998.
Conjunction, junction, what's your function?
Hooking up words and phrases and clauses.
Conjunction, junction, how's that function?
I got three favorite cards that get most of my job done.
Conjunction, junction, what's their function?
I got and, button, or, they'll get you pretty far. And, that's an additive, like this and that. That's sort of the opposite, not this, but that. And then there's or, O-R, when you have a choice like this.
Junction, what's your function?
Hooking up two box cars and making them run right. Milk and honey, bread and butter.
And then I don't know any. I remember the science one was Interplanet Janet. Remember that one?
Interplanet Janet, she's a galaxy girl.
There you go.
I know all these ones. Then they had the globe one that he was singing so low that his face kind of melted into the stairway of the. Remember that
Oh,
one?
yeah. And then I remember Figure Eight was something all about eights, and all I remember is she did the ice skater did the eight, and then didn't the eight sink into the water or something like it.
I do remember that.
Yeah.
Do you remember, was it Sesame Street or was it Electric Company when the guy would paint like a number six on the guy's bald head?
Oh,
Today's show is brought to you by the number six, and he would paint it on the top of somebody's head.
that must have been wasn't. Sesame Street always had the number that was, right? That was brought to you, or was that
Yeah,
Electric Company?
maybe that was Electric
Maybe
Company.
it
I don't
was, yeah.
remember. Anyway.
So Conjunction Junction, what's your function? Yeah, it was from 1973. Pretty cl get what else does it make you think of?
I'm bringing it up right now on my computer. I should have had it up already, but I don't remember how many songs that they had there, but you can order that set of music. They sell it.
Yeah, and I remember, and I was looking, and I actually just worked out. They had where the new groups did it, and I think Better Than Ezra, or it was a 90s group, maybe it was a 90s thing, but they redid Conjunction Junction. And then I actually just worked a Better Than Ezra concert last month, and they did not play Conjunction Junction.
Yeah.
They should have. They didn't have too many good songs, but
this is basically what you're talking about is part of the Schoolhouse Rock rotation.
Yeah. Yep.
And they had like four or five of them.
Yeah. Yep.
Or more.
They had a bunch. I remember they had the Melting Pot where they'd, and I still, whenever somebody says the Melting Pot, I still think of that cartoon where they'd show all the people getting to the pot together, like, or something.
Yeah. I'm doing a thing on Schoolhouse Rock songs. Oh my gosh, there were, you can watch all of them in a row on YouTube.
Yeah.
Interjection, excitement, wow, or sad, I'm for the other team. Remember that one?
Yeah, I'm for the other team, yeah.
Hooray, I'm for the other team.
He's one guy, yeah, I remember that. God, I can't. They were great.
I love that. That was like one of the better parts of cartoon. You know, I used to get up at 5 o'clock Saturday morning. Nobody's up. House is yours.
Yep.
Go downstairs, turn the TV on real low. Your eyes would hurt for the first couple of minutes. You know, you got your bowl of, like blueberry or whatever you got rocking there. And first thing that was on was like the Big Blue Marble. I don't know if you remember that show, Big Blue Marble.
It was
like a science.
What did
like
you
an earth science type show.
Well, I got one better for you. Did you ever get up so early that they would have like the, what was it, the national anthem and the...
Isn't that when they, like at 2 o'clock in the morning when they shut everything down?
Yeah, remember it'd be shut. You'd get like a test pattern, and then it would come, and then the national anthem would start.
Yeah.
And then the cartoons.
The flag, they'd throw the flag.
Yeah, and then there'd be like a little educational thing, and then the cartoons would start. Yeah.
My grandpa, to the day he died, whenever the national anthem was on TV or radio, he would stand and put his hand over his heart.
Wow.
World War II vet.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, just shit you remember about your childhood.
Our national anthem.
And that brings a close to another episode of the 70s versus the 80s. Folks, we have something new. We have a trivia question. So if you can answer the question, who sang I'm Just a Bill in Conjunction Junction and what other job he had? The first one to answer that trivia question on our Facebook page will get, Jim's going to send you either Pop Rocks or Charm Pops. I can't say it. Your choice. So just answer that trivia question on the Facebook page. Be the first one and we will read your name off and you will get a Pop Rocks or Charm Pops. Easy for me to say. But this has been another episode of the 70s versus the 80s. Thank you. See you next episode.